In 1930, America's first network comedy show went on the air over NBC Radio's Blue Network. It was called The Cuckoo Hour.
Calling all cars, calling all cars. Why? Because all cars need to have their spark plugs cleaned regularly in the new AC cleaner. Just as all car owners need their evening of laughter with Raymond Knight and the Cuckoo.
Cuckoo
over
spark plugs, AC spark plugs.
Cuckoo over spark plugs, AC spark plugs.
Crazy over spark plugs, AC spark plugs.
Cuckoo all the time.
With a worn plug in your car, you'll never travel very far.
Hey, hey, always out with clean plugs. Get a lot of clean plugs, hey, see, get them every time.
Introducing Raymond Knight, King of the Cuckoo. Good evening, folksies. This is Dr. Raymond Knight, the voice of the diaphragm enunciating period. My clowning station is open for business and everybody's welcome.
Hello, Doc. How's Fix?
Fix? She has a little distemper. How's your dog?
I don't own a dog, but I'm thinking of buying a porcupine. Is a porcupine a nice animal?
Well, it has its points. Now that that's over, let me ask you...
Well, a lot has changed since 1930, but one thing that hasn't is laughter. People laugh at pretty much the same things today as they did a half century ago. This is Johnny Carson inviting you to stay tuned, and you'll hear what I mean.
Ladies and gentlemen, over the next 2 hours, the most famous comedians who ever lived join Johnny Carson as he looks back at five decades of comedy on NBC. Whitman's Chocolates, makers of quality box chocolates since 1842, and Delco Electronics, bringing you the art of music through the science of sound, celebrate the Thanksgiving season with another NBC Superstar Holiday Special. Johnny Carson's Half Century of NBC Comedy, Volume 2.
Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary...
Live from New York, it's Saturday Night!
NBC Saturday Night. Ladies and gentlemen, we give you the funniest man in America, Fred Allen!
From New York, where you can still leave your front door unlocked if you live in a police station, it's Late Night with David Letterman.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word is paper. P-A-P-E-R.
Really?
You bet your life. Here he is, the one, the only...
Why didn't this happen 11 years ago when I was 30 years younger? It's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Lever Brothers Company presents the Pepsodent Show, starring Bob Hope and his special guest, Al Jolson.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, he...
Well, here it is, Thanksgiving again. And we're back with another sample of the great comedy heard on NBC radio and television over the past 50 years. This time around, we'll be hearing all-time comedy legends like Jack Benny, W.C. Fields, George Burns, and Gracie Allen, as well as relative newcomers like Eddie Murphy and Joan Rivers. But whether it's Bob and Ray or Nichols and May, laughter is the common denominator. If something was really funny, say, in 1945, it probably still is. For example, Jack Benny's character is the world's stingiest man.
It sure is dark tonight. No moon. Oh, well.
Hey, Bud. Bud.
Huh?
You got a match?
Yes. Yes, I have one right here.
Don't make a move. This is a stick-up.
Mister, put down that gun.
Shut up. I said this is a stick-up. Now, come on. Your money or your life? I said your money or your life. I'm thinking it over.
Another timeless character in comedy was developed by Mrs. George Burns, Gracie Allen. Gracie played a scatterbrain. Her specialty was illogical logic. It made perfectly good sense, but only to Gracie.
I wonder why Gracie's folks want to sell the house. Gracie!
Oh, George, a terrible thing just happened.
Well, never mind. Why do your folks...
Guess what? I dropped Herman's sardines on your clean shirt.
Oh, fine. Look, Gracie...
And the starch got all over his sardines. Isn't that awful?
Look, Gracie, why all of a sudden do your folks want to sell the house?
Oh, well, San Francisco is a long way from Hollywood, and I decided it would be nice if Mama and Daddy and Bessie and Willie didn't live so far away from us.
You mean like in Santa Barbara?
No, not that far away.
Glendale?
No, not that far.
Closer?
Yeah, much closer.
Next door to us?
Not that far away.
Gracie.
You guessed it.
That's without a doubt the worst thing I ever heard.
Yeah, now I gotta get Herman some more sardines.
Oh.
Then there was the legendary W.C. Fields, joined here by Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
It's good to see you, Bill. Two things improve with age. Old friends and old wine.
Don't mind if I do. Matter of fact, I drink medicinally only. When I feel ill, so to speak.
And how often are you ill?
Oh, I've been feeling poorly now for the last 40 years.
Yeah. Irreverence is another thing that always makes people laugh. Poking fun at authority, deflating the pretentious, are classic tools of comedy. And no one ever used them with greater ability than Bob Elliott and Ray Goulding.
To be successful, you must have a career. You must have a trade.
Enroll now in the Bob and Ray Counterfeiting School. Learn how it feels to make real money.
If you're interested, just write your name and address on a postcard and mail to Crooked, NBC, New York.
That's Crooked, NBC, New York.
Let's take a step beyond irreverence and you get satire. Satire is one of the trickiest areas of comedy. And the quickest to go stale. But a performer like Garrett Morris from Saturday Night Live can defy the odds.
Hello, I'm Mark Mbutu from the newly emerging African nation of Namibia, a former German colony located in Southwest Africa. Namibia is an undeveloped nation, and we are appealing to you as world citizens. We need your fondue set. Many people in the United States receive these fondue sets as gifts for anniversaries, birthdays, and housewarmings, and often put them up on a shelf and forget about them. There are thousands of Namibian housewives who could cheer up an otherwise dull dinner party with one of these sets. We already have enough of the little Sterno cans for underneath these sets from when the Germans were here, so only send the fondue past themselves. And the little long forks, if you have them. Our address is Fondue Sets for Namibia, Box 180, Namibia, West Africa. And we wish to thank Mr. and Mrs. Norman Prager for sending us the water pick and the deluxe toaster oven. Thank you.
Coming up on Johnny Carson's Half Century of NBC Comedy, Volume 2, Master Humorists Jack Benny and Fred Allen, right after this from Whitman's Chocolates. It's Half Century of NBC Comedy, Volume 2, continues with some all-time comedy classics.
Fred Allen was one of the great humorists of the century. Edgar Bergen and his alter ego, Charlie McCarthy, once described him this way.
Among the greatest of the radio greats, Fred Allen was always a little over the heads of the masses, always serving caviar to the general.
Yeah, there always was something fishy about Allen.
Well, one place where Fred spooned out judicious portions of his distinct humor was in Allen's Alley. It was an unlikely street he'd visit each week on his radio show. Allen's Alley was home to Senator Claghorn. He was from the South.
That's a joke, son.
Titus Moody, a New England farmer.
Howdy, bub.
And Mrs. Pansy Nussbaum. These three, played by Kenny Delmar, Parker Fenley, and Minerva Pius, were asked a simple question by Fred as he strolled down the alley each week. And the whole country listened.
The senator's home.
I'll knock and see what happens.
Somebody, I say, somebody knock.
Yes, I know.
Claghorn's the name. Senator Claghorn, that is.
I know you're from the South.
When I'm in New York, I'll never go to the Yankee Stadium.
Now, wait.
See the Giants unless the Southpaw's pitching.
Well, look,
I refuse to watch the Dodgers unless Dixie Walker's playing.
Now, wait a minute.
Stop interrupting. Where's your manners?
Manners? I have more.
Try listening. You might learn something.
Listen, all I'll ever learn.
Your tongue's wagging like a bland dog's tail in a meat market.
You're winded, hey?
You're sucking in some air, son.
Well, leave a little. I'm breathing, too, you know. Tell me, Senator, what is Washington doing about coal prevention?
The Senate reconvened just in time.
Yeah?
I was glad to see Senator Aiken back. Aiken back, that's a joke, son.
I know it's a joke.
That was a scrawny side splitter.
I wouldn't
have that. That was a green fought shrieker.
Listen, you don't know what it is.
I keep crossing them and you just sidestep them.
Well, look. Now, wait.
Say, you're a regular sad sack. Sack, that is.
Now, you wait. Tell me, cool off now just a second. Do you have a favorite cure for a cold?
I caught a cold last week.
Yeah?
Like to ruin my filibuster.
Ruin your filibuster? What did you do?
I took an old southern remedy, son. I drank down 2 buckets of hot mint julep.
You drank 2 buckets of hot mint juleps and you still held the floor?
Held the floor? Son, I couldn't get up off it.
Well, I wonder how Titus Moody is doing this evening.
Howdy, Bob.
Say, Mr. Moody, you look a little tired.
I know. I was up all night. Couldn't get a wink.
You didn't sleep a wink?
No, it wasn't that. Somebody stole my tiddly.
Well, Mr. Moody, tell me, has this cold epidemic hit your farm?
My wife had a nasty cold.
Did you call the doctor?
Yeah. Gall down, quack, give her sulfur and molasses. Put in too much sulfur.
Well, how can you tell he gave her too much sulfur?
When my wife sits in the dark, she glows.
Well, are you doing anything about it?
Why, Senator Claghorn, a foreigner next door... He sent me over a bucket of hot mint julep.
For your wife?
No, for me. Tonight I'm getting lit up to keep her company. So long, Doc.
Looks as though Titus is going to get lit up on his weekend. Well, let's see what a knock here will start.
No.
Ah, Mrs. Nussbaum.
You're expecting maybe Tula-lula-lula Bankhead. No.
Tell me, Mrs. N., have you had any colds in your house?
My husband, Pierre, is sick.
Oh, really?
They are maybe sending him to a clinic. The Meyer brothers.
Oh, the Meyer brothers. Well, didn't Pierre try any cold remedies?
Every day is a new remedy. First, he is bringing home fruit for drinking fruit juices.
What kind?
Oranges, grapefruits, tambourines.
Well, how long did he drink the fruit juices?
One day.
Mm-hmm.
Then Pierre is opening up the window and throwing out the fruit.
Oh, he had another remedy?
Vitamins from vegetables.
Oh, good.
He's bringing home carrots, sprinkler beans, and rutabagos. Well,
how long did he try vitamins?
One day.
One day again.
Pierre is opening up the window and throwing out the vegetables.
He had yet another remedy?
Absolute rest.
Oh.
You're staying in bed.
Uh-huh.
I am bringing meals. I'm bringing pills. I'm bringing hot water bottles.
Well, how long did this last?
One day.
And then?
I am opening up the window and throwing out Pierre.
Allen's Alley is classic radio comedy. I say radio comedy because throughout the 30s and 40s, a style and approach to humor developed particular to radio. It allowed the person listening to participate by using his or her imagination. The fact that there wasn't a picture actually enhanced the comedy by making writing, timing, and delivery all the more important. Here's another vintage example. Jack Benny again, joined by the man who does the voice of Bugs Bunny, Mel Blanc.
They killed my workers and took the mine. I had to flee into the hills for my life. After wandering for days, I stumbled exhausted into a camp of insurrectos. At first, they were suspicious, but finally one of them came over and shook my hand.
You want to shake hands?
Sí.
Then I consider you my friend?
Sí.
You will always help me?
Sí. Then to my surprise, he walked away. I turned to go. Someone pulled at my sleeve.
Oh, Senor Irish. Senor Irish.
What is it?
Before you leave, I would like you to meet my little 6-year-old son, Tomas.
Oh, hello, Tomas.
Tomas, he is learning to be a magician. He does a wonderful act on the stage with his sister.
Really? So you're a magician, eh, Tomas?
Say.
Do
See.
With your sister?
See.
What is your sister's name?
Sue.
Sue?
See.
Well, what do you do in your act?
Saw.
What do you saw?
Sue.
Put you up to this. Who was it? You?
She.
Who are you?
Sorry.
Johnny will be back with Flip Wilson, Mae West, and the gang from Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In after this from Delco Electronics. Once again, here's Johnny with more of his half century of NBC comedy, Volume 2.
What we can say and do in broadcasting now is much less restricted than it was in the 30s. For example, Mae West on the Chase and Sanborn Hour in 1937. This program starred Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy and was one of the hottest shows on radio. May's appearance was on a Sunday night in December. The weather was cold over most of the country, so about 25 million people were indoors listening to their Atwater Kents. For you younger folks, that was the name of a radio. What the listeners heard sent them into blue-nosed rages. Thousands sent letters and telegrams to NBC and to Chase and Sanborn. The FCC even started an investigation. And all because of this.
Oh, hello, short, dark, and handsome.
Hello, tall, blonde, and terrific.
Say, Charlie, do you smell that perfume?
Yes.
Isn't it ravishing?
Yes, it is. It's ravishing. It's weakening. So help me, I'm swooning.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Why, it's my favorite perfume, Ashes of Men.
Uh-oh. Ashes of Men? Holy smoke. She's not going to make a sinner out of me. Oh.
Tell me, Miss West, have you ever found the one man in your life that you could really love?
Sure, lots of times.
Oh,
you look pretty good to me, Charlie. Come here. You ain't afraid I'd do you wrong.
Well, now that you ask, I...
Oh, you're afraid I'll do you right.
Well, I'm slightly confused. I need time for that one, May.
That's all right. I like a man what takes his time.
Well... Oh, but May, don't be so rough. To me, love is peace and quiet.
That ain't love, that's sleep.
It's hard to believe now, but the public outcry was so great, Mae West was actually banned from network radio after this appearance. Her exile was to last over 15 years, and for 10 of those years, NBC wouldn't allow anyone to mention her name. 33 years later in 1970, Flip Wilson created Geraldine, an equally outrageous character on his NBC TV show. On one of her first appearances, she was interviewed by David Frost.
Well, Geraldine, I suppose we'd better get started.
Which camera am I on?
The one over there, look, that one there with the red light.
Do they see me everywhere?
Everywhere.
Hello, killer! That's my boyfriend.
Killer.
Whoa! You get.
Promises. Well, tell us a little something about your childhood.
Well, honey, when I was a kid, we didn't have television, all that stuff. The only entertainment we had was hiding behind the couch.
How do you feel about conditions for women in general?
Honey, let me tell you. The cost of living's going up and the chance of living's going down.
Well, You know that I usually end an interview by asking my guest to give a definition of something like love. Do you think you're qualified to speak of love?
Honey, I paid my dues.
No, but if you don't mind me, for instance, what is your definition of love?
Love is a feeling you feel when you're about to feel a feeling you never felt before.
Geraldine and Mae West. They said just about the same things, but the network and the audience has changed completely. Comedy programs on NBC have always reflected the times, and ever so often a whole new approach to humor comes along. In 1968, as the world got a little crazier, a new sound arrived that fit the mood.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure, here are the songs of Dan Rowan and the lovely Dick Martin.
The show is Laugh-In, the biggest comedy smash in years.
Good evening. This show is going to be a different show. It's not a regular variety show. You realize that you now have a chance. 1 hour a week, you can do anything. You can say anything you want to say.
You're kidding.
Anything that you
You'll
want to say.
You'll get a kick out of this one, then.
Anything that the censors and NBC and the sponsors will allow you to say.
That does cut down the odds, doesn't it?
Well, the odds may have been cut down a little, but Laugh-In still captured everybody with its fast pace and bright young cast, including Goldie Hawn, Ruth Buzzi, Artie Johnson, Joanne Worley, Henry Gibson, and Judy Carn, who played the Sock-It-To-Me girl.
And now, folks, it's Sock-It-To-Me time. Oh, blimey. They did it to me again.
How I got it socked to me by Henry Gibson. Pretty much in the usual way.
Each week, Laugh-In had regular features like Sock-It-To-Me Time and The Party. The party brought together the whole cast to dance and chat, while the Laugh-In camera and microphone zoomed in on bits of conversation. It sounded like this.
I went to a parochial school. We really learned the three R's: reading, writing, and rhythm.
Well, no, actually, it's in Idaho.
Would you mind saying that again?
Idaho?
That's frightfully interesting. We pronounce it Ohio.
My parents say I don't know what good, clean fun is. And they're right. I don't know what good it is.
What would you say if I told you I'm willing to do anything to have children?
Adopt.
It's like this. If you like Burbank, you're gonna love Paris.
Now, the Mormons had the right idea. It's just a shame that polygamy never caught on among the married people of this country.
Now, you shouldn't make fun of polygamies. They can't help it if they're not called.
Johnny will be back in a minute with a presentation on comedy that he did as a senior at the University of Nebraska in 1949.
Very interesting.
But first, this from Whitman's Chocolates.
Come pick up Chuck Bailey.
Volume 2 of a half century of NBC comedy continues with a question. Can you guess who this next voice is?
The comedy gag writer is truly a forgotten soul. But if you don't mind being forgotten, have a terrific sense of humor, and what's more important, can put it down on paper, the top comedians are waiting right now with check in hand.
That's a senior at the University of Nebraska in 1949. His name? Johnny Carson.
Well, that's right, Bill Wendell. For my senior project at Nebraska, I recorded a bunch of radio comedy shows using a home tape recorder, spliced them together into a presentation on comedy writing. When my professor, Bill Dempsey, played the finished tape back, this is part of what he heard.
Let's look at one of radio comedy's most often used combinations, the use of exaggeration and the painting of a silly or ridiculous picture in the listener's mind by the means of words. Listen to the master of the exaggerated and ridiculous humor, Bob Hope.
Let's go over and see my uncle's display.
Now, which uncle is that?
Burbank Hope. He's got a new way to raise peaches. When he plants the seed, he pours some tequila over it.
Tequila's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, but that way you don't have to pick the peaches. They come up to the house, knock on the door, and say, as soon as I shave off this fuzz, I'll be ready for breakfast.
Well, You got to remember, this was a term project for college. It had to be scholarly and analytical. So at one point, I put in a list of all the various joke styles I could think of.
Exaggeration, insults, the use of a running gag, a silly or ridiculous picture, use of specific words, the two-way gag form and its extension by use of repetition and an abrupt vocal change or intonation, topping, and the wide use of misunderstanding.
Now, did you get all that down? Sounds like a grocery list. Well, I needed an example of all those techniques being used, so I included a Milton Berle monologue from one of his early television shows. This kind of material made Milton the most watched star in the medium salad days.
Come on, folks, start laughing early. To the person who laughs loudest tonight, I am giving two tickets to South Pacific. Really, and the boat leaves in 20 minutes.
The boat leaves in 20 minutes?
You know, that's called an opening joke, you see. And really, and the ground should open up under the writer who gave it to me. The publicity that I've been getting. Last week, my picture's on the cover of Time and Newsweek, two magazines. And of the two magazines, they don't know which sold more copies, Collier's or Liberty. But if you think that I'm getting publicity, next year they're putting my brother Frank's picture on all income tax forms, illustrating a dependent. Where's Mr. Gallup? Oh, Mr. Gallup! Mr. Gallup!
What is it, Bill? What is it, Bill?
Well, Mr. Gallup, tell me, what's new?
On this program, nothing.
Oh, Mr. Gallup, you're so delightful. You're a regular puss in boots. Whenever I see that puss, I want to boot it. Bandy words with Bill. Don't ad-lib with me, old boy. Mr. Gallup, humor like mine has to be trained.
Trained? Yours isn't even housebroken.
Quiet! After all, Mr. Gallup, my comedy...
Oh, comedy, comedy. Can't we spend some time commenting on important issues?
Important issues?
Yes. Now, for instance, the Russians just lifted the blockade.
The blockade? That was a joke.
Burl, if that was a joke, you'd have lifted it.
Quiet now!
In 1949, when I did this project, just about all the great radio comedians were on the air. So I was able to get some great excerpts from all the famous shows, especially Jack Benny's. Even back then, Jack was my comedy idol, and his style was never captured better than in this sequence.
Jack Benny has gone to the home of his violin teacher, Professor LeBlanc. The professor has been unable to go to Benny's home because of a sprained ankle.
Does Professor LeBlanc live here?
Oui, I am Mrs. LeBlanc.
Well, I'm Jack Benny.
Sacre bleu.
Thank you. Suzette, who is he? Oh, it's me, Professor. I heard what happened to you, so I came over here for my lesson.
Sacré bleu.
Thank you. Professor, how's your sprained ankle?
A dismal failure.
What?
Nothing, nothing. If you are here for a lesson, let's get it over with.
Oui. I mean, yes. Now, Professor, when you were giving me my last lesson, what were we doing?
You were playing the Blue Danube, and I was picking up the dead flies.
No, no, no. I mean after that. Anyway, what number do you want me to play today?
The same one you have been practicing for weeks and weeks and weeks. Minuet Lentique.
Oh, yes, yes. Here, I'll get my violin out of the case.
Suzette, aren't you going to kiss me goodbye?
I am not going out.
You will in a minute.
Well, here we are. Now, just a second. I better tune up.
Does not make any difference.
Oh, yes, yes. I have to be in tune. Now, shall I start with the minuet lentique?
Start with anything.
Okay.
No, Monsieur Benny. Every week you make the same mistake. How many times do I have to tell you it is not da 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 da?
Oh.
You have to slide. Da, da, da.
Oh, yes, yes. I'll get it this time.
So
Sacré bleu.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Pierre.
What did you say?
Vous l'apprenez à jouer au violon depuis 2 ans. Je ne l'ai tendu qu'une fois, mais il est le plus mauvais joueur que j'ai tendu dans toute ma vie.
Oui. Oh, Professor, what did she say? It loses something in the translation, but it means you stink.
Don't go away. Joan Rivers, Gilda Radner, and Eddie Murphy join Johnny when Volume 2 of the Half Century of Comedy continues. But first, Johnny's last words from his term project on comedy writing.
Bill Morrow, former writer of the Jack Benny Show, says, "Some of my best ideas strike me when I get up in the morning. So my advice is, always get up in the morning."
Now from Elko Electronics, here's more of Johnny Carson's half century of NBC comedy, Volume 2.
Over the past few years, a whole new group of comedians have emerged who are taking their places with the Gracie Allens and Bob Hopes before them. Several appeared all at once about 1975 when Saturday Night Live debuted. Among that group, Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, the late John Belushi, Chevy Chase, and Gilda Radner.
Please.
Oh, why, this is Miss Emily Letella.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm sorry, Miss Letella, but we've already had someone give an editorial reply. Thank
you for calling. I just wanted to say that I think that the people are worrying too much about conserving this country's natural resources. Now, what's so important about resources?
Miss Letella.
Other kinds of horses are important.
Miss Patella, I'm sorry, but as I said, we've already had somebody else do this week's reply, and I want to thank you for calling. Maybe next week you can...
Oh, well, this is an outrage!
Yes.
Is this cheddar cheese?
Oh, that's Chevy Chase.
What?
Chevy Chase.
Oh, I must have the wrong number.
Yes.
Never mind.
A little more recently, Saturday Night has gone through a rebirth, and the new crop of performers are as sharp and funny as ever. Writer-performer Tim Kazurinsky and young superstar Eddie Murphy demonstrate.
Hi. The show is Jazz Riffs. And I am your host, Art Hammond. We are, of course, listening to the very tasty, unmistakable sound of Thelonious Sphere Monk. My guest tonight used to play with the late, great Monk. He's a giant in the jazz field himself. Won't you please welcome... Well, I can't really tell you his name. In fact, he is wearing a mask to disguise himself. But welcome him nonetheless.
I deeply regret that I'm unable to reveal to you and all of y'all the nature of my true identity. You see, I have a reputation in the jazz community which I do not wish to besmirch. I'm quite sure you'll understand.
Now, you are one of the finest sax players in the business.
Oh, yes.
You have an amazing sense of time. Oh, yes. Your changes help the fusion of jazz and rock.
Oh, yes. That's very true.
But that's not how you make your living.
Fred, you on the street? The market for jazz is pathetic, all right? And the good clubs all disappeared. It's tough to find a gig. So the truth is, I'm ashamed to say this, but to survive as a jazz artist, I have to prostitute myself.
You mean that you actually...
Yes, I do weddings.
That's the gutter.
Yeah, I know, it's very sad, man. I got a trio, and we do weddings, proms, anniversaries, man. Last week was the worst, man. We really, you know, due to financial circumstances, we actually had to do a sweet 16 party, man.
I do not see
how you can do what you do.
Yeah, well, you see, sometimes we have some fun, you know, like when the bride hits the dance floor time, we do a wedding, we'll play, you know, That's Why the Ladies Are Tramp, you know. That's funny, you know. Yeah. Or she looked pregnant, something like that, for us, you know, we start playing Having My Baby. But the best of all is them Silver Jubilee 50th wedding anniversary thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes we cut in some hot Dixieland, start jamming, you know. Get that Dixie lick, is real infectious, you know. And them old people get up, start trying to boogie and whatnot. Pretty soon they start dropping out like flies. Dying and stuff.
That's sad.
Well, not really. You know, but Bobby, my drummer, you know, he knows CPR. That's that cardiopulmonary resuscitation.
Yeah.
Where you pound on the bam, 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 on the chest, you know. So Bobby always bring him back to life, you know. They usually be a good tip in it for us, you know.
There's Eddie Murphy on Saturday Night from New York, and then there's Joan Rivers on The Tonight Show from Hollywood. Joan kind of grew up on Tonight, honing the style we've all come to love.
Where I am from, which is Larchmont, New York. How many, anybody here from Larchmont?
Yeah.
Oh, then nobody's left. Oh, I remember you now. Larchmont, New York is in the smallest town. We have a mirror at one end. I mean, it's just, we don't have a nightlife. We have a brunch. I mean, it's just, the 7-Eleven store is called 3 1/2. Does that give you the picture? I mean, it is such a small town. Our peeping Tom looks at himself. It is so small. Ask me as small. Thank you for asking. The Stop and Shop merged with the A&P and is now called the Stop and Pee. Dr. Malinsky is the best doctor and the only doctor in Larchmont, New York. And he is a poor man because he is a doctor from the days when there were good doctors and not thieves. Because doctors today take your money out. Doctors today are like bank robbers, which is why they both wear masks. I guess, oh, yes. MD stands for make dollars. Richest of all are, not that I know about this personally, plastic surgeons. They are... Plastic surgeons. A friend of mine, no names, I'll tell you during commercial. And for those of you who write in, I'll tell you too. A friend of mine had her rear end lifted $5,000, and he pulled it up so far now her theme song is How High the Moon.
Coming up, comedy immortals Gracie Allen, Jimmy Durante, Edgar Bergen, W.C. Fields, and Groucho Marx following these words from Whitman's Chocolates. Johnny Carson's half century of NBC comedy, Volume 2, continues with comedy immortals. Here's Jimmy Durante.
Start off each day with a song. Now even when things go wrong, you feel better. And look better. Ah. I'm glad that note came out. On the last X-ray my doctor took, it showed up as a safety pin. That's already, you must have sold your lunch and watch. You're really ticking to me.
Ah, Jimmy Durante. He was a true show business legend. One of that rare breed who connected with audiences completely. Another superstar in this category was Gracie Allen. And it's easy to hear why, as she chats with her husband, George Burns.
Look, you got a letter from your sister, Bessie.
Oh, Bessie.
What does she say? Anything?
She's just wonderful herself. But her son, Willie.
Willie, that's the one with the high blood pressure.
Yeah,
the one who sleeps on the floor to keep his blood pressure down.
Yeah, that's the one.
Smart kid.
Yes.
What about Willie?
Well, he broke his back.
I'm glad to hear that.
Huh?
Broke his back? How did he do that?
Well, on account of he's left-handed.
He broke his back because he's left-handed.
Yeah, well, you see what happened was he had a donut in his right-hand pocket, and when he went to take it out with his left hand,
he broke his back?
Yeah.
Well, you tell Bessie the next time to tell Willie that if he's got a donut in his right-hand pocket, to try to take it out with his right hand.
Yeah, but that's hard to do when you have your pants on backwards.
Yeah.
Had his pants on backwards.
Yes. Well, you see what happened was he had a suit of clothes with two pairs of pants, and he put one pair on frontwards and one pair on backwards.
So that he could go either way?
That's when the truck hit him.
The truck? What truck?
The truck that didn't have its light slit.
Why didn't the truck have its light slit?
He didn't have to. It was daytime. Am I getting you
well, now? Well, no. That's how to follow. But if he had his pants on backwards, I mean, the fellow in the truck, if he had his light slit, didn't he see Willie coming?
He didn't know it was Willie. He saw two pairs of pants coming toward him, and he drove between them.
Goodbye.
Another duo that became immortal in the hearts of millions was Edgar Bergen's little sidekick Charlie McCarthy and W.C. Fields. For years, they were heard on the Chase and Sanborn Hour, and America drank up every slur, insult, and put down.
Well, as long as you're here, Bill, you can talk to me while Charlie's getting his hair cut.
You know, Edgar, it's touching to see your affection for the little nipper. It strikes a tender chord in my heart.
Oh, thank you, Bill. You know, I thought you didn't like children.
Oh, not at all, Edgar. I love children. I can remember when, with my own little unsteady legs, I toddled from room to room.
When was that? Last night?
Quiet, Wormwood, or I'll whittle you down to a coat hanger.
Yeah.
Fields and McCarthy battled their way into immortality. Groucho Marx chatted his way. At least on radio and television, he did. After a brilliant career on stage and in films with his brothers, Groucho searched in vain for a program to fit his talents. Finally, in the late 40s, a producer named John Goodell set him on a stool, put two contestants in front of him, and hung a duck on the ceiling. The result was one of the funniest programs in broadcasting history. You bet your life.
Lena Pereira and Mercedes White, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, which
she's
is
Mercedes,
it?
And she's Lena.
You're Lena? You're not, though. You're fatter, aren't you? Are you married, Lena?
Yeah, she's married.
Are you all married?
Yeah, I'm married. Oh, she.
You're both married. Well, that's a shame. How do you know Mercedes is married?
Well, she's my sister. She's my sister.
My wedding. How long have you been married, Lena?
13. About 12. Well, no, it's 13. Well, it'll be 13 in November.
Well, in a day, if I will or not.
I think it's a good idea. Talk it over and let me know what your... let me know what your final decision is, that's all. Well, what have you decided upon?
We don't know yet.
Don't give any snap opinions.
We don't know yet. Everything's changed.
My denying and...
You know how things go. There's change. We have to go maybe
and
change a little bit.
Ben is 11.
But, yeah, so far we don't know.
The only thing Pyman has changed.
One, and she's got one that's 8.
Well, yeah.
You know that, don't you?
What?
That's what Schopenhauer said. The only thing Pyman has changed.
Change, yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Johnny Carson will return with more of his half century of NBC comedy, Volume 2, after this pause for station identification. Is NBC. No other network can make that statement. A language of an unbelievable as it seems, Delco Electronics and Whitman's Chocolates are paying for another hour of Johnny Carson's half century of NBC comedy, Volume 2. So don't touch that dial. Turn up the radio. Grab another chocolate. And listen as Sonny Hawes and Jennifer Weston, 2 9-year-old girls, drop by to sell Johnny some jokes at a penny apiece.
You want to tell us some of the jokes?
It'll cost you a penny.
Okay. I heard you girls wanted your money in advance, so I have some pennies here, okay? I have to give you the penny first. Who's going to do the first joke?
Me.
Okay, here's your penny. Now let's hear the joke.
Why does a golfer wear two pairs of pants?
Why does a golfer wear two pairs of pants? I don't know.
Because he might make a hole in one.
He might make a hole. Okay, your turn, yes.
And why doesn't... What do you call a cow with no legs?
What do you call a cow with no legs? I don't know.
Ground beef.
Ground beef? Okay, that's a good one. All right. Your turn. You girls are really underpriced here. These are better jokes than penny piece. You should have been charging more. Did anybody ever tell you that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, what's your next one?
Did you hear that Willie Nelson got hit by a car?
Did I hear Willie Nelson got hit by a car? No.
He's playing on the road again.
He's playing on the road again? These jokes are worth lots more than a penny. Those are good jokes. Do these young ladies get paid for being on the show tonight?
Yes.
You'll get paid to be on the show? You know that? Anybody tell you how much? They didn't. Let's find out. How much?
$12,000 apiece.
More scintillating humor when Johnny Carson returns with the Smothers Brothers, Steve Martin and Bill Cosby, after this from Delco Electronics. Oh, more of Johnny Carson's half century of NBC comedy, Volume 2.
Well, this is a history of comedy, so I thought it would be appropriate if we led off Hour 2 with a look at the way comedy has viewed history.
Now, when he was a young man, he never thought he'd see people stand in line. The boy, King.
Steve Martin's musical salute to King Tut sets the mood. As many years ago as Steve's singing history lesson takes us, comedians over the past half century have looked further still, all the way back to Noah. In fact, when Bill Cosby first emerged as a comedy force in the early 60s, he was telling the history of Noah and making history of his own.
There's a fellow by the name of Noah, built an ark. Everybody knows he built an ark. He said, what did Noah do? He said, well, he built an ark. But very few people know about the conversation that went on between the Lord and Noah. You see, Noah was in his rec room sawing away. He was making a few things for the home there. He's a good carpenter. It's vuba, 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 vuba. Noah. Somebody call? Vuba, vuba, vuba. Noah. Who is that? It's the Lord, Noah. Right. Where are you? What do you want? I've been good. I want you to build an ark. Right. What's an ark? Well, don't worry about that, Noah. When you get that done, go out into the world, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark. Right. Who is this really?
After the flood, man settled back on the land but soon grew restive. He yearned for new worlds to conquer. Eventually, a young Italian sailor named Columbus set out with three ships on a perilous journey over uncharted oceans. Stan Freberg picks up the ball from here assisted by the Maytag repairman, Jesse White.
Admiral Columbus, sir. The men are weary, on the point of madness.
Well, that's the trouble with labor today. Don't they realize we're going to discover the new world?
You've been saying that for the last 57 days.
Well, nobody forced you to come along, Your Majesty.
My doctor told me I should go to Florida for the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I still can't see what you needed free ships for.
I got a better deal on the fleet rate.
I'll accept that. But we better sight land pretty soon. There's rumblings of mutiny.
Really?
Yeah, come over here and listen.
All right.
Rumble.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I'll jump up here in the rigging and speak to him.
You mean on top of everything else, this ship is rigged?
Now hear this. This is the Admiral speaking. I know the going has been rough, but if we can just hold out a little while...
Rumble.
Stop that rumbling down there.
Rumble.
Who could blame him? The whole thing is madness. I don't like the way the crew is acting.
Well, you're overplaying a little bit yourself there.
Well, for all our sakes, I hope... What was that?
French horns.
No, I mean before that.
Oh, it was the lookout. He sighted land.
Hooray!
Quickly, hand me the glass.
All right.
Now, the other one.
Oh.
To the new world.
Likewise.
Once word spread of the new world, settlers came in great numbers and pushed west, looking for careers and pictures. As the people moved, so did the railroad, stretching its steel arms toward California. Here are Tom and Dick Smothers at the very beginning of their career.
Hundreds of years ago, the railroad started America. How about that? Men were building railroads across a vast wilderness, a vast spider web of steel rails. These railroad men, with vision in their eyes and giant 9-pound hammers clasped in their hands, toiled across building the railroads, toiling across the vast bosom of America. Sorry, threw a little sex in the show. But this wasn't just a fun job. There were dangers in this job as these railroad men built the railroads over the mountains, and there lurked dangers in the mountains, and they built railroads over crevices. Deep crevices in the ground, and in the bottom of the crevices there was pumice. Vicious pumice with claws and foam coming out of these pumice mouths, and these railroad men, they're just going wop, 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 wop. And they come up to a crevice and they say, "Wow, look at the pumice down in the crevice. Hey, I'm not gonna build a railroad across the crevice because there's a pumice in the crevice."
No, there weren't any.
There's pumice in the
crevice. Don't say there were pumice because there weren't any. There wasn't one puma in one crevice.
There was 9 pumas in that.
There weren't any pumas. You want to know why there weren't any pumas?
We don't
have any pumas in this country. There are no pumas in America.
We accept everybody in America.
Right, we accept everybody in America. That's true.
Right.
But if you want to keep your story historically correct,
do you? Yes.
Do you want to keep it valid?
Yes.
All right, then you get rid of those pumas right now.
I'm not going down that crevice.
Carson returns with Mike Nichols and Elaine May, Georgie Jessel, Imus in the Morning, and my TV boss, David Letterman, after this from Whitman's Chocolates. Johnny Carson's half century of NBC comedy, Volume 2, continues with a look at the telephone.
Ah, the telephone. Probably no other instrument has given comedians more material through the years. In 1932, a young comedian named Georgie Jessel was appearing on the Eddie Cantor Show. He became famous for doing a one-way telephone conversation with his mother.
Hello, Mom. This is Georgie, your son, from the money every week. How are you, dear? Oh, I'm just fine. Yes. How are you feeling? Oh, you do? Is that so you got dizzy spells? Every 5 minutes, a dizzy spell. How long does the spell last? A half hour. Well, why don't you do something about it? You see spots in your eyes. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, why don't you wear your glasses? They're on your forehead. Well, how long will it take to get that down? If you see spots, you put on... Oh, you got the glasses on? How is it? See, the spots better with it. Okay. How did you like that bird I sent you home for your birthday? You cooked it? Mama, that was a South American parrot. He spoke 5 languages. He should have said something. Well, never mind that. Looky, I'm anxious to know about Anna. How is she getting on with her fella? Yeah, well, the girl is in love, and there you are. Well, let her get as much out of life as she can. You know what Longfellow tells us? Tell me not in mournful numbers, life is but an empty dream. I say Longfellow told us that. I shouldn't go around with him, he's drunk. No. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, the poet. He didn't live next door to us at all. That was Lowenstein, a bookmaker who lived next door.
By the 50s, equipment had gotten sophisticated enough for you to hear both sides of a conversation. Mike Nichols and Elaine May took advantage of the technological improvements.
Hello.
Hello, Nancy?
No, it isn't. I'm sorry you have the wrong number.
Is this Rector 44445?
No, it isn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. But don't hang up.
Why not?
I don't know. You sound very nice.
Thank you. Why don't you call the operator? What a wonderful idea that might be.
Well, now, then, listen, don't get angry.
I'm not angry.
What number is this?
This is not Rectory 44445.
Yeah, but I didn't say what it was, and I said, what is it?
Well, it isn't what you want.
Well, we don't know that.
Yes, we do. We know that very well. I know that. Now, I'd like you to know it, too, and then we can know it. It'll be a secret that we share.
What do you look like?
I'm very beautiful.
Well, aren't you even curious about me?
No, not at all.
But listen, this might be the big thing in your life.
Yes, it might. What a pity, because I'm going to have to miss it.
Listen, why don't you let me come up and you take a look at me, and if you don't like me, you can just slam the door in my face. Now, that's a deal.
It's not necessary. I don't like you from talking to you.
Well, then why haven't you hung up?
Oh, what a good idea.
As the excitement of hearing both sides of the phone call waned, comedians came up with new ways to misuse Alexander Graham Bell's invention. Don Imus, better known as top New York City disc jockey Imus in the Morning, thought it might be fun to order some hamburgers one morning.
Morning, McDonald's.
Hi, McDonald's hamburgers?
Yes, it is.
This is Sergeant Kirtland of the Air National Guard, and I'd like to get some lunches to go if I possibly could.
We're not open for another 2 hours, sir.
Well, what time would it be? About 10 o'clock you'd open?
Oh, 10:30, sir.
Yeah, well, I wondered if I can give the order now. I need quite a few, and stop by this afternoon and pick them up.
Well, I'm just cleaning up. I'm the assistant manager.
Like to get, if I could, 1,200 hamburgers.
12? Pardon me, sir?
1,200 hamburgers is what we'd like to get. We got a troop movement scheduled, one with the local colleges, and like to just get some lunches to go.
Just a moment. I'm going to have to ask my... Just could you hold on for
a
second?
Yeah,
Sergeant,
fine.
Just a moment, sir. There's a guy here who's a sergeant with the National Guard. He wants 1,200 hamburgers.
Hello?
What should I do?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, listen, what do you think?
Well, we don't have enough meat or the buns for 1,200 hamburgers.
Well, can't you get some from the other stores?
I guess
that's the government, you know.
Yes, sir. I'll have to do that.
I'll tell you what. Why don't you just take the order and then get them as soon as you can, and I'll call you back in an hour, sir, okay?
That would be good, sir.
All right. We need,
You want
1,200 hamburgers. Now, listen, on 300 of those, I want you to hold the mustard, but put on plenty of mayonnaise and lettuce. And I don't want any onions on those. And on 200, when I make that 201, I want you to hold the mayo and lettuce, but lay on the mustard and make those medium rare. And if on the first 300... Let's see. On the first 300, if you can cook 275 of those rare with onions and mustard and mayo and no lettuce.
Rare.
You got that so far?
Yeah.
No lettuce. Then we want 250 just plain.
Right.
With no mustard or mayonnaise or lettuce or onions. Well, wait a minute. You can put lettuce on three of those and cook those medium well with no butter on the buns. And can we get some chocolate shakes for everybody? Hello?
Not to be outdone by Imus, my late-night colleague David Letterman occasionally uses the telephone on his program in a segment known as Calls You Don't Want to Make. Just a few weeks ago, a woman named Isabel Edmonds stepped out of David's studio audience and said,
I'd like for you to call my daughter and tell her I cannot come to her wedding.
Oh, that's sweet, isn't it? What a lovely sentiment from Mom. Kind of the perfect gift. Now, Isabel, why wouldn't you be going to your daughter's wedding?
Well, I have to be on a trip in Chicago. At the time, she's planning to be married in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And she set the date while I was in Anchorage, Alaska, a couple of weeks ago, and called and said and gave the date, and I just can't change my plan.
Hmm. You're not involved in any sort of extradition process, are you? Moving Alaska and Atlanta and Nashville, and is this your normally you would attend this, of course, your daughter's wedding.
Actually, I'm a volunteer for the General Federation of Women's Clubs, and I'm on the international board, and I have to go to the meeting.
Okay, well, I'm sure your daughter will understand, as long as you got a good reason for not being there. I mean, let's face it, more than likely she'll get married a couple more times, you can go to one of those. No point in going to this one, is there? Where exactly are we calling, Isabel?
Hey, pardon?
Where exactly are we calling?
Marietta, Georgia.
That's right, dead center in the state, isn't it, pretty much?
It's near Atlanta.
Near Atlanta. And what's your daughter's name?
Edith. Edith Edmonds.
Edith Edmonds. And you're Isabel Edmonds.
And I'm Isabel.
Yeah. You having fun?
I was up until now.
Hello.
You better be very careful how you tell her then.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, is Edith Edmonds there, please?
This is she.
Edith, how are you? My name is Dave Letterman. I'm calling from New York City. How are things in Marietta, Georgia?
Just great, thank you.
Oh, good. And how's Mom? I understand Mom's traveling now, huh?
Yes, I don't know where she is most of the time.
Yeah, and I understand you're getting ready to... You're getting married. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and when do you think... when is the date for that?
October 23rd.
Yeah, so it's a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, and I guess you're looking forward to having the entire family there, huh?
That's right.
Well, Edith, guess again, because... Now, your mother, Isabel, is right here, and she's fine, and everything is good, but she's going to be in Chicago the day of your wedding and can't seem to what?
Can't seem to make it.
No, she can't seem to make it to Marietta for the big wedding.
No, I don't believe that.
Well, she. You want to talk to her and straighten it out? I'm sure you have a lovely gift in mind, though, don't you?
Oh, surely.
What would it be? Like...
I don't know. Ask her what she wants.
How about could you use a toaster oven?
Yes, I guess I could.
All right. I tell you what I'm going to do, Edith. I'm going to put your mother on the phone, and you two can wrestle this sucker over a couple times.
Okay.
Listen, I'm sorry that your mom won't be there. I would love to be there, and my best to you and yours, and thanks for talking with us.
Thank you so much.
Okay, now here's your mom.
Okay,
bye-bye. Goodbye, Edith. You sound like a very nice woman. You ought to try and make it.
Yes.
Now, stay where you are. Johnny listens to 50 years of commercials right after this commercial from Delco Electronics.
Radio has the perfect answer for you to round out your mid-mornings.
Johnny Carson's half century of NBC comedy, Volume 2, continues with a sampling of 50 years of comedy commercials.
Ed Wynn was one of the first big comedy stars on NBC. Starting in 1932, his Fire Chief program was one of America's favorite shows. And not only was Wynn funny, but he brought innovation after innovation to radio. He was the first person to use a studio audience, and he was the first radio performer to kid his sponsor. Initially, the Texaco company objected, but as more and more gasoline left the pumps, they went along with the gags.
Graham, my uncle bought a new second-handed car, you know.
What kind is it, Chief?
Well, I don't know. He calls it Baby.
Why is that?
I don't know. It won't go any place without a rattle. I don't know.
Chief, I have a tip I'd like to pass along to all motorists tonight.
What's that?
Fire Chief was made for instant pickup.
Yes.
Thrilling speed and power.
Yes.
That's the kind of action fire engines, emergency vehicles of all types must have.
Think of that, Graham. Oh, I don't say that gasoline isn't powerful.
Yes, it is.
Quite the contrary.
Uh-oh.
Quite the contrary, Graham. I know that's powerful gasoline.
Sure is.
But I'll show you how powerful it is. This is so silly, I don't even want to say it.
Well, tell me about it. Go on.
Well, the Texas company gave me a present last Saturday of $200.
They did?
Yes, they must have soaked the $200 in Fire Chief gasoline. Because I never saw anything go so fast in all my life.
With the Fire Chief program leading the way, other shows jumped on the bandwagon. For many years, Johnson's Wax sponsored a situation comedy called Fibber McGee and Molly, played by Jim and Marion Jordan. On this show, the announcer, who was named Harlow Wilcox, would always wangle his way into the plot of the story about halfway through and casually shift the conversation around to Johnson's Wax products.
Well, come on, McGee, get busy. The doghouse, remember?
Oh, yes, the doghouse. Well, in the first place, I've got a new...
Hello there, Molly and Fibber. What goes on?
Oh, McGee is building a doghouse, Mr. Wilcox.
What kind of dog have you got?
Well, he hasn't got one yet.
I ain't quite decided what kind.
I think you ought to have a good hunting dog. Would you be interested in a pointer?
Oh, boy, I sure would. You know anybody that's got a good pointer for sale, Harlow?
Well, I'll give you one, free.
Oh, how wonderful.
Well, don't forget to use Johnson's Glow Coat on your kitchen linoleum, because when a dog tracks dirty and it can easily be wiped up with a damp cloth, you know. And his claws won't scratch a floor that's Glow Coat protective.
Say, that's a good idea.
Sure. And you know how easy it is to use Johnson's Glow Coat. Just pour a few drops on the floor and spread it around, and it dries to a beautiful gleaming luster in 20 minutes or less.
Well, we'll certainly do that, Mr. Wilcox.
Yeah, well, when can I see the dog, Harlow?
What dog?
I thought you were going to give us a pointer.
I just did. Use Johnson's Glow Coat.
The writers of Fibber McGee would stop at nothing to integrate Johnson's into the story. A little later on the same show, Fibber declared...
This is going to be the doghouse of doghouses. A canine Taj Mahal. I'm going to build it with a guest room in case Glow Coat wants to have a friend over for the weekend.
Glow Coat?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to call our dog, Glow Coat. So he won't scratch.
Of course, not all the commercials were this clever. Most were repetitive and dull. Fred Allen knew this and regularly did outrageous commercial parodies. Here with the DeMarco sisters as vocalist, Fred pans the typical singing commercial of the middle 40s.
Oh, Lefkowitz's liverwurst is the finest in the land. When you want the best in liverwurst, Lefkowitz is the brand. It's round and firm and it's fully packed and you get twice as much. Try feeling a Lefkowitz liverwurst, it's the skin you love to touch. Oh, it's chock-a-block full of vitamins, it's nutritious and delicious. Try serving it after the opera nights with cold cuts and with conditions. You can buy it by the inch, your foot on the Bowery or at the Ritz. When you want the best in liverwurst, it's made by Lefkowitz.
Despite Fred Allen's best efforts, singing commercials remained a way of life in radio. Occasionally, they even offered some unexpected humor. Take the time Bing Crosby was a guest on Bob Hope's show. It was December 1950, and Bob's tape-recorded program was sponsored by Chesterfield. As part of the taping session, Bing and Bob had to sing about the product. But it seems Hope lost his lyrics.
Join me, will you, Junior? Let's sum this thing up musically.
Yeah, wait a second.
You got a copy of it? Where in the devil is it?
I don't have it.
I don't have it. I've been frisked. I've been rolled.
And there's a klepto here somewhere. Where the hell is it?
I've been rolled.
I don't have anything. No talent, no script. I can't read. Let's get the stuff. You throw everything on the ground. What the hell is the matter with you?
Never.
Okay, we're ready if you're through arguing back there.
How's it going now? How's the melody?
Chesterfield, Chesterfield.
Oh, yeah.
I'll show you how to sing.
Make it from the last fly on the commercial.
Oh, that's swell, you. Cappy. Thank you, and pack.
Okay.
Just in field. You like it at Mutual. Where are we here?
The head's rolling in the morning.
Come on, let's go. It's overtime, and it's on you. Al! Oh, my God, not that.
Go. Join me, Junior. Let's sum it up musically.
Chesterfield, Chesterfield always takes first place. That milder, mild tobacco never leaves an aftertaste. So open a pack, give them a smell, then you'll smoke them. Doesn't that prove it?
Hope and Crosby were working on tape, so none of their shenanigans made it on the air. Until now, anyway. But one night, on the live Pepsodent toothpaste program, Eddie Cantor tried to get veteran NBC newscaster H.V. Kaltenborn to plug the product.
You know, H.V., I've heard all of your broadcasts, and those days during the last international crisis must have been pretty hectic for you.
Yes, Eddie. Sometimes I'd broadcast 24 hours a day.
Gosh.
In the morning, I'd send out for orange juice, and after brushing my teeth, I...
Wait a minute, H.V. What do you brush your teeth with?
A toothbrush.
Yes. I knew you didn't use a whisk broom, but what do you put on the toothbrush?
My teeth.
Look, H.B., you use toothpaste, don't you?
Why, yes, of course.
What kind of paste?
The very best kind.
Yeah?
Comes out of a tube.
But there's something written on the tube. What is it? What does it say?
Squeeze this end.
These days, probably the funniest things about commercials are the products themselves. Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd, and Gilda Radner realized this when they were Saturday Night Live regulars and came up with a commercial to prove it.
New Shimmer is a floor wax.
No, New Shimmer is a dessert topping.
It's a floor wax.
It's a dessert topping.
It's a floor wax, I'm telling you.
It's a dessert topping, you cow.
Hey, calm down, you two. New Shimmer's a floor wax and a dessert topping. Here, I'll spray some on your mop and some on your butterscotch pudding.
Mmm, tastes terrific.
And just look at that shine. Come on, laugh.
Hey, outlasts every other leading floor wax 2-1. It's durable and it's scuff resistant. And it's delicious. Sure is. Perks up anything from an ice cream sundae to a pumpkin pie.
Made from an exclusive non-yellowing formula.
I haven't even touched my pudding and I'm ready for more.
But what about black heel marks?
Dirt, grime, even black heel marks. Wipe clean with a damp cloth.
Oh, sorry, honey. I'll clean that up.
Oh, no problem, sweetheart. Not with New Shimmer.
New Shimmer, for the greatest shine you ever tasted.
We'll visit the Oval Office when Volume 2 of Johnny Carson's half century of NBC comedy continues. Right now, we pause for the folks who make Whitman's chocolates. Now, as a special feature on Volume 2 of the half century of NBC comedy, the Mighty Carson Art Players turn back the clock to the days when James Watt was still Secretary of the Interior. The scene, the Oval Office, where a briefing is about to take place. Johnny is the president.
Well, now, would you send in Jim Baker, please?
Morning, Mr. President.
Well, good morning, Jim. Just sit down there.
Yes, sir. Mr. President, your press conference is scheduled to begin in an hour, so we only have a short time for me to brief you on the kind of subjects that the press may throw at you.
Well, now, the environment is on their minds, and I'm sure they'll ask me about my Secretary of the Interior.
What?
I said I'm sure they'll ask me about my Secretary of the Interior.
What?
I just told you I think they'll ask about my Secretary of the Interior.
James Watt. You're scheduled to go swimming with him tomorrow morning at the Y.
Where?
Why?
Why?
That's right. With Watt.
With Watt? I don't even know with who, Jim.
Not who. What?
Well, now, Jim, let's get this straight. I'm going swimming tomorrow with who?
What?
Where?
Why?
Jim, let's go on to the Middle East now. I'll need the first name of the head of the PLO, that Arafat guy.
Yes, sir.
I said I'll need the first name of the head of the PLO.
Yes, sir.
Jim, it's nice of you to be polite, but what is his name?
No, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, now, you're giving me two different answers, Jim. Now, what is his name?
No, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, now, I ask you what is the first name of the head of the PLO, and you tell me no, sir.
That's right.
Then you tell me yes, sir.
Absolutely. You got it.
I got what?
He's the Secretary of the Interior.
Jim, I don't understand why you're doing this.
Oval Office, Baker. Yes? You have the head of the Republic of China calling for the president. Premier Cheng Deng-Hu. Hold on. Mr. President, who's on the phone?
Jim, I don't know who's on the phone.
That is correct.
What's correct?
No, he's your Secretary of the Interior.
Now, Jim, let's start all over here very quietly. Just tell me, Jim, who is on the phone? Who is on the phone? Who?
Yes, sir.
That Arafat guy is on the phone, Jim?
No, sir. Who is?
What?
Swimming. Tomorrow morning at the Y.
Johnny will be back with a closing tribute to Jack Benny. Right after this from Delco Electronics. Ladies and gentlemen, here again is Johnny Carson with Jack Benny.
For years and years and years, I've been Johnny Carson's idol.
That's true.
Now, you've said it, haven't you?
Many times. True.
Many
true.
Times. Then all of a sudden, the whole thing switched, and Johnny Carson became my idol. And you want to know something? It's not nearly as much fun this way.
To wrap up volume two of this half century of NBC comedy, let's pay one more visit to the Jack Benny program. Jack knew instinctively what was funny for him and for all the other members of his cast. That ability paid off in some of the funniest programs ever to hit the airwaves. Listen now as Don Wilson, Eddie Rochester Anderson, Mel Blanc, Mary Livingston, Bob Crosby, and Jack himself do their stuff.
And now let's go out to Jack Benny's house in Beverly Hills. It's such a lovely morning that outside on the front lawn, we hear the splashing of birds in the bird bath. While upstairs, we hear the sound of the shower.
Beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a wonderful feeling that everything's going my way.
Rochester, I'm through showering. You can stop singing now.
Okay.
Say, Rochester, I don't know where you're buying soap lately, but that new bar I just used didn't lather at all.
I didn't know you took a new bar of soap. Did you get it out of the service closet?
No, I found it in the kitchen.
In the drawer?
No, in a dish near the drain board.
Well, congratulations, boss.
Why?
You have just showered with a peeled potato.
A peeled... Imagine showering with a peeled potato.
You now have the skin that lamb chops love to touch.
Never mind that. How about fixing me some breakfast?
Yes, sir. Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a wonderful... Oh, good morning, Polly.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. Ah, I've got a wonderful feeling that something is coming my way.
She had a feeling, all right. She laid an egg. Coming! Oh, what a beautiful morning!
Hello, Rochester.
Oh, good morning, Miss Livingston. Come right in.
You must be in a good mood. I heard you singing as you were coming to the door.
Oh, I always sing when it's getting close to my payday.
Why do you sing so long before payday?
There ain't much to sing about after.
I know what you mean.
Oh, good morning, Mary.
Hello, Jack. You know, it's so early, I thought you'd still be in bed.
In bed? Are you kidding? I've already taken my shower. Rochester, how about breakfast?
Coming up.
Mary, would you care for something to eat?
No, thanks. I'm not hungry.
You know, Mary, you look kind of cute this morning. You really do. How about a kiss?
Okay. That's funny.
What?
I just said I wasn't hungry, and now I've got a craving for potatoes.
Well, we've got the cleanest ones in town.
What?
Nothing, nothing. Rochester, is breakfast ready?
I just put the coffee on. What else would you like?
Well, I'd like a little bacon and, one fried EGG.
Yes, sir. A little bacon and one fried EGG.
Jack, what's the idea of the spelling? Why don't you just say you want a little bacon and one fried...
Don't say it, Mary. Don't say it. We always spell it. You know, Polly lays an EGG every day, and she'd go crazy if she ever found out we were eating them.
Oh.
EGG, EGG.
Isn't that cute?
EGG, 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 EGG. Hey.
Rochester, no eggs. Fix me some pancakes. What was that?
The toast, it flew out the window.
Oh, my goodness. That piece of toast landed on the lawn, and it'll attract ants. I'll be right back.
Yes, inhaling.
Inhaling?
Deeply. Relaxation so the air will keep coming.
Pick that out, Lucia, and be sure Paul gets 50 of it, eh? Well, Cadenza, are all singers alike, or is there a difference between them?
Oh, Susan,
what kind of voices do singers have?
Well, of course, to begin with, our first classification is there are women's voices and men's voices.
Well, I didn't know that. I must tell this to this. Suppose I wanted to get up a lady quartet. Could I find one who sings bass?
No, the contralto is as low as a lady goes.
Yeah, ma'am. Well, gee, obviously, we haven't been out with the same kind of lady. Talk about golf. How long do you have to be a pro before you can become an amateur? Oh, no, my mistake. That's tennis. I was thinking of... What is your favorite club?
The Annandale Golf Club of Pasadena.
What's your best score for 18 holes?
On a regulation 18-hole championship course, 61 at the Forest Hill Field Club in Bloomfield, New Jersey.
How about the... What is the average golfer go around in?
I think 95 to 100.
How about the girls? Don't some of the girls do better than that?
Oh, a good many of the girls go around in a great deal less.
What time does your club open up in the morning? I remember the first time I played golf, I went around in 75. I didn't play at all in 76. I was busy as I was born. How can I improve my score? I shoot around 94. That's a cheating.
I think I'd advise you to take a few lessons from a competent instructor.
I've taken
lessons. You're a little practicing and a little playing.
I've taken lessons. It's hopeless.
Well,
how could I learn to win without playing well?
You might resort to a little pencil pushing, or you might have a hole in your pocket, or you might have a handy toe in the rough, or you might use a hand mashie more frequently.
How is it you know so much about those things? Tell me about that pencil pushing again, eh?
First of all, you have to forget to count over five.
On any hole?
Any hole.
What about the 540 at Hillcrest?
Well, I think you could still forget to count over five on that.
I do, but you know who I am? I'm in the first hand trap leading the tee. I made 11 Arabs the last time I did. You must have had a number of exciting moments as a professional golfer. Can you tell us about one of them, Paul?
Well, as a tournament player, I've had many exciting experiences. Perhaps the most exciting is during the playing of the international four-ball matches in Miami, Florida. I was partnered by Horton Smith in this best ball event, and on arriving at the fourth tee, I dropped a high five-iron shot right on the top of the head of a gentleman sitting on a camp stool behind the green. He had just reached up to take his hat off to polish his head with his handkerchief when the ball lit on the top of his head, and he dropped off of his seat like he'd been shot with a Winchester rifle. But on the next year, Horton and I incidentally won the first International Four-Ball Championship, and we were paired again as partners. The next year, arriving at the ninth green with 2,000 or 3,000 people down the left side of the ferry, Smith hit a booming hook down the left side. Down goes a man. Who is it? Our friend of the camp. The publicity on the International Four-Ball matches the next year says that Dr. Johnson is in Miami to watch his perennial favorite, Runyon and Smith, in the International Four-Ball matches that he will gallery in an armored suit.
You beat the other two couples, and you get a chance at the $2,000 question. Now, I can't tell you how much the other couples won, but send them as offstage to remind our listeners.
The Lady Barber and the Married Man are ahead with $200.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can give you $20. You selected women athletes as your category. Now, here's your first question. How much will you bet?
$10.
$10. In what sport is Gussie Moran famous?
Tennis.
Tennis is right. Remember, you're going for $2,000 tonight. Now, how much of your $30 will you bet on your second question?
$20.
In what sport is Florence Chadwick famous?
The tough one.
Take it away. No, I'm sorry. It's tennis. She broke Gertrude Everly's record for the channel.
They now have $10.
You now have $10, he said in a low, funereal voice, huh? Here's your face, sir. How much of the 10 you going to go for?
Nine.
Well, you're going to hang on the edge, huh, Paul? In what sport is Patty Boyd famous?
No.
Golf is right, huh? Well, we're on the way again. Now that's $19. All right, you got, here's your last chance to beat the other couple. How much of the 19?
The works.
You want to shoot the works? All right. In what sport is Barbara Ann Scott famous?
Ice skating.
Ice skating is correct.
Of $38. And that means the Lady Barber and the Married Man with $200 get the chance at the $2,000 question.
Funny, I don't see it around here either. There's the Coleman's garbage can. It hasn't got a lid on it. I wonder if the toast could have gone in there. Gee, I gotta find her. We'll be loaded with ants. There's several pieces of toast in here.
Jack!
Huh? Oh, hello, Bob. I was just looking for a piece of toast.
Well, Jack, why didn't you tell me that things were that rough? Why, I'd work for nothing.
Bob, you don't understand.
Well, Jack, you can be honest with me. Come on, I'll take you down to market and buy you enough food to last for 2 months.
Bob, I'm trying to tell you that... What'd you say? Huh?
Well, I said that I'd take you down to market and buy enough food for 2 months.
Jack, come on in. Your breakfast is ready.
You eat it. Bob and I are going shopping.
Hey, now, wait a minute. You mean you have food in the house and yet you are going to let me try to buy some for you?
Bob, I was just going to teach you a lesson for being so silly. Now, come on in the house.
Crosby.
Hello, Rochester. Hiya, Mary.
Hello, Bob.
Mary, pour everybody some coffee, will
you? Okay.
There's someone at the back door. I'll answer.
Hello, Mr. Bunny.
Oh, the man from the bakery shop.
I got the stuff that you ordered. Some donuts, some chocolate cake, some pastry, and a half a dozen cimarron rolls.
You still can't pronounce it, can you? Look, it isn't cimarron, it's cinnamon. Now, let me ask you something. Maybe this will help you pronounce it. How are these rolls made?
Well, you take some flour, sugar, eggs, and do you want to know all the ingredients?
Now, look, it isn't ingredients, it's ingredients. Yes, I want to know all of them, then.
Well, there's flour, sugar, eggs, shortening, and cinnamon.
That's it. Now, look, take your time. Think. Okay. Now, let me hear you say it.
Ingredients.
I don't mean ingredients. I'm trying to get you to say cimarron. I mean cinnamon.
Why don't you order something else? You drive me nuts.
All right, just give me my stuff. Thanks, and goodbye.
Bye.
Jack, who is that?
Oh, that silly guy from the bakery. The fellow who insists upon saying cimarron rolls. Well, here you are, kid. You can have some of these with your coffee. They're nice and fresh.
Wait a minute, Jack. He's right.
What do you mean he's right?
Well, look at that label on this paper box. These are genuine cimarron rolls named after J.P. Cimarron, founder of the Cimarron Baking Company.
What?
These cimarron rolls should not be confused with ordinary cinnamon rolls, which are made from entirely different ingredients.
Well, Jack, I guess that'll hold you.
Hold me nothing. That silly guy had that label printed himself just because he can't say cinnamon. He must be crazy.
Well, boss, there's one way of finding out.
How?
Ask him if he showers with a peeled potato.
I said at the beginning of this comedy cavalcade that laughter is the common denominator of our lives. Well, after listening to 50 years of humor, that seems more true than ever. The more we learn to laugh with each other, the more we'll learn to live with each other. But back to Fred Allen in 1949. I think he said it best of all.
Maybe if we can find a common bond in humor to stop the fussing, fighting, and feuding in the world, we might actually laugh our way into peace. In the final analysis, laughter is the universal language of mankind. And a little nonsense now and then is relished by the wisest men.
The only thing I can add to that is keep laughing, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving. See you during the next half century.
You've been listening to Johnny Carson's Half Century of NBC Comedy, Volume 2, brought to you with Thanksgiving greetings by Delco Electronics, bringing you the art of music through the science of sound, and by Whitman's Chocolates, makers of quality box chocolates since 1842. Johnny Carson's Half Century of NBC Comedy was engineered, edited, and mixed by Steve Arthur, with Bruce Briggs in Hollywood, and disc mastering by Tom Coyne of Frankfurt Wayne. Special thanks to Gerald Gibson at the Library of Congress, Ron Simon at the Museum of Broadcasting, and Drew Wilson of Carson Productions. Rosemary Emanuel and Patricia Viscardi were our production assistants. Associate producer David Gibson. Associate director Wendy Maxwell. Johnny Carson's Half Century of NBC Comedy, Volume 2, was directed by Peggy Flax and was originated and produced by Guy Ludwig with Johnny Carson. This program is dedicated to Roseanne Inzerello, 1957 to 1983. Bill Wendell speaking from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.